Hi, hey, this is Authority Zero, and you're listening to the Mabel Syndrome Podcast.
Yeah!
It sucks, I still think Mabel, she's the bomb.
Hey everyone, this is Kristen. Welcome to the Mabel Syndrome Podcast, episode 24. Episode 23 was a doozy. We had Goddess Soma on, so if you missed that, be sure to check that out. That's Fat Mike's ex-wife, and she is an artist and an activist and a dominatrix. Lots of cool things. It was an episode that did really well. People really liked it, so check that out. And how do we top that? I guess the only way for us to top that is to have an interview with Dave Haas. So that's what's going to happen today. It's going to be just a short intro because I'm really excited to get to the interview. I wanted to set it up just a little bit. If anyone isn't aware of Dave Haas, you're really missing out, first of all. Second of all, he's been in the punk scene forever, since he was in a punk band like in middle school, and hardcore and metal, and his most recent band was The Loved Ones. They were signed to Fat Wreck for a while, and when that band disbanded, he decided to pursue some solo work. And one of the things I thought was really fascinating that we touched on in the interview is that there were two pivotal moments in his life, in his career, that other people made an impact on him and gave him encouragement to pursue music. And the first one was when he was a roadie for the Bouncing Souls and also for Sick of It All. And both of those bands were like, dude, why are you roadieing for us? Like, you are so talented. You should be in your own band. Like, what the fuck? And it was the push he needed to go pursue his own band. And that's when he started The Loved Ones. And the second was when he was still in The Loved Ones, but the band had gone on hiatus for a little while. And he was doing a solo tour called the Revival Tour with Brian Fallon, Chuck Reagan, those guys. And they were super complimentary about his solo work and his songwriting and singing, and it really encouraged him to go off on his own and do his own thing. So I just think that's super cool that it's, you know, it's peers helping peers and encouraging peers. Like, you're really good. You should go off and do this instead of holding people back or discouraging them. Those are two really pivotal points where his peers were encouraging. And I think that's so cool. And the other thing I like about Dave Haas is that, you know, his solo albums each have their own kind of theme or story. And he's really personal in this interview about a divorce that he went through a few years ago and how, you know, his album Devour is really a lot about that. And it's touching and it's sad and it's raw. It's an amazing album. But then he met his now wife, and when they were just dating, he decided to move from Philadelphia, where he was born and raised. I always sound like the Fresh Prince when I say that, but anyways, he moved out to Santa Barbara to take a chance on love. And, you know, he talks about that in the interview and how cool that was to fall in love again and how, you know, he didn't think that was going to happen. So his latest album is called Bury Me in Philly, but it's a lot about his move to the West Coast and finding love again. And it's much more uplifting and positive. So Dave Haas is a guy who has punk rock roots and definitely, I would say, like, punk rock lyrics, like thoughtful, philosophical, really deep punk rock lyrics that are amazing. But his music isn't completely punk rock. Like, it's, you know, his solo work is, it's very, you know, it's along the same lines as Frank Turner. So for people that are a Frank Turner fan or really like what Chuck Reagan and Brian Fallon do on their own, then you absolutely have to check out Dave Haas. You're going to love this interview. I think another really cool thing about this interview is how he talks about his brother. So you learn a lot about his family life, how he grew up, his brother that he tours with now. And I hope you guys love this interview. So again, we really hope that you find us on iTunes and give us 5 stars, and please leave a comment, and we welcome your feedback. We welcome any insights about the podcast and how things are going, or people that you think we should interview. We have a long list of people that we do want to interview, and time and work and family and all these obligations seem to get in the way. But we are on it, and we absolutely have an amazing list of people that we plan to interview, and episodes that we plan to get out soon. So here is the interview with Dave Haas, and I guess I get to pick the song for the end. So I would pick from his newest album, Bury Me in Philly. I really like The Ride. And he and I talk about that song in the interview, so you'll have to listen for that. And then there's another song that's just, it's just so fun. The song is called Dirty Fucker. And how can you not just love the title of that song and a song that says Dirty Fucker in it? Like, that's awesome. So I'm going to play both of those because I love both of those songs off of his newest album. And here's the interview with Dave Haas. So this is Kristen, and I'm here with Dave Haas. Thank you so much for allowing me to do this interview with you.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah. So you came from New York today, like drove up?
We just got here. Yeah, we left New York last night after we played on a boat. Mm-hmm. We did a concert cruise that went around the Statue of Liberty. They last about 3 hours. Mm-hmm. Our friends in Restorations opened the show, and then we got onto land, had New York City pizza, and then drove up into Connecticut. The vehicle that we're in is a converted Sprinter, so it's like a Sprinter is like a Mercedes.
The van.
Yeah, so it's like a mini tour bus. There's like bunks in there, and our friends own it and rent it to us. But there was like a warning light that went off about some exhaust thing, so we were at the Mercedes dealership this morning.
Oh no.
It was cool. We got to watch the World Cup and the coffee just flows there, so
that's true.
We took full advantage.
Yeah. Oh man.
Yeah, and then that's a long boring story about how we got to
Did Boston. You stay in Connecticut last night?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then you just got here today.
Now. Yeah, we just got here a few minutes ago, and I've never been to Royale, so this is my first look around this place.
Yeah. It's a great venue. It's fun.
Yeah, it seems ornate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like very old and
yeah,
like a lot of things in Boston.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah. So Frank had 6 sold out shows here in Boston. Isn't that insane?
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Good for him.
And I know, it's crazy. And did he call you personally and ask you to support him at one of the shows, or?
No, I heard about it through my booking agent, and said, yeah, if we can make it work, let's do it. Mm-hmm. I think at the level he's operating, I don't know how much texting he's doing to book shows, you know what I mean? He plays so many per year, and in such a pretty vast level now that it would be cumbersome probably to... Mm-hmm. to translate text from friends into actual shows, but we just got the offer from
his people talked to your people.
Yeah, our people talked. Yeah,
yeah.
So I didn't know what the scope of it all was.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't know if we were open enough.
Is it kind of like you hear Frank's people say, "Hey, do you want to play with us at a certain show?" And you're like, "Yeah, of course, I'll make it happen."
Yeah, as long as, really the way it kind of breaks down for me these days is, like, it depends on what people want to see. Like, if they're looking for a band show or a duo show. And then the agent's job is to kind of determine, your value and all that other stuff.
If it's worth it.
Work out the money. I mean, to me, I'll just play and play and play, as a person who loves to play and loves music. And so you end up hiring the those kinds of people to make sure you do it strategically, and, or help to help you do it strategically. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of how that all gets sorted out. But yeah, just said, hey, this is the date. Mm-hmm. You want to do it? You know, this is the money.
Yeah.
And this is the, you know.
Yeah, and you have the mermaid with you tonight.
Yeah, we do, which is fun. We, my brother and I were playing about 6 months worth of duo shows. Mm-hmm. After 140 mermaid shows that we did last year.
Yeah.
So we took about the top of the year to do something different. In fact, we were just in Boston to do City Winery like 3 weeks ago, maybe.
How is that place? I have another show going there in a couple weeks, and I've never been there.
It's terrific.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really comfortable. Mm-hmm. It sounds really good. It's a great experience, especially for what we were doing. We were playing the song Stripped Down. Just developing more of like a singer-songwriter approach to what we were doing. And, you know, this will be a rock show for sure, you know, with the band. But, yeah.
So getting the whole band out. Does the band live in California mostly?
The band lives half in California and half in Philly.
Okay.
And because I'm from Philly, there's like, you know, a whole back line's worth of gear. Mm-hmm. So we can kind of... And we do so much on the East Coast and so much in Europe that it just makes sense to have sort of a home base in... A little home base in Europe where we have some of our gear, a major home base in Philly, and then California as well. So
okay.
Miles, our bass player, lives in Orange County. Kevin, our drummer, lives in L.A. I live in Santa Barbara. And then Kaylee, our keyboard player, and my brother Tim both live in Philly.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. So it's a little mixed.
It's mixed, yeah. That's why it sort of takes some logistical doing to kind of kickstart the engine. You know, get everybody in the same place. It takes some, figuring.
Yeah.
And so we ended up doing New York City boat cruise last night as well, just to kind of make sure the whole thing was...
That's what it seems like. Yeah, I was looking at your tour dates, and it seems like you go back home, and then you come out for a few shows.
Yeah, we're not touring on a release.
Right.
So we're doing, like, festival kind of things, or opening for... bigger bands or whatever, you know, various radio stuff and whatever. So when you're not touring on a release kind of thing, it's smarter to just do the things that are like the special event kind of things.
Yeah.
You know, and we really worked hard last year doing a lot of shows.
Yeah.
So, this year's been a little different, and then next year we'll be touring again, like on a record. And
so does that mean you're writing?
Yeah, I have Tim and I have most of the next record pretty much ready to go, and we have an EP that we're going to record and hopefully get out in the fall.
Oh wow.
Yeah, so, and we probably won't, we'll get to the record maybe in, that'll come out in the spring, I think.
Okay.
But yeah, the rest of this year, amongst all these like festival things and appearances or whatever you call them, we are recording throughout that time.
Yeah.
You know, you get the band together, do a couple shows, and then like the next 2 days or the next 3 days after tonight, we'll be writing and arranging songs and stuff.
Oh, cool! So, in Philadelphia, where you go back?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And you've mentioned that Tim is like your musical soulmate, writing partner, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So does he? Is that for every single song?
No, it's not for every single song, but if I end up with like a bolt of lightning and have most of the song done, I still give it to him and say like, well, what do you think? And he'll make his notes and have suggestions and stuff like that. There's a couple on the new record or on the new batch or whatever. The EP is mostly stuff I had laying around.
How many songs will that be, maybe?
I don't know. I don't really... It's so strange because we're... You know, I feel like I've been operating in, like, an older rock and roll paradigm for so long where you make, like...
An album,
and then an EP is a set amount of songs. But I've been saying for years that, like, the most inspiring creative output seems to be coming from hip-hop. Mm-hmm. And they're just doing all the coolest stuff, you know? Seven-song records, nine-song records, four-song EP, whatever, you know? So I think... What I'm doing is like bundling a little batch of songs for the EP that I think kind of complement each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll try to do that with the production as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then and then that'll be that, you know. It could be four, it could be six, I don't know.
Right.
After six, you're definitely getting into album territory.
Yeah.
But,
So you said songs that kind of complement each other. Do you mean lyrically? Like, are you going for a theme? Would you go for a theme or a story?
Sort of. I don't know about a story, but a theme, yeah.
Yeah.
I like to work in themes. I mean, that was sort of what we developed. I mean, even as I was going back to these songs to release the EP, or to think about recording the EP, I was saying to Tim, like, is there something wrong with these songs? Like, they sound really good to me, and we didn't use them.
Oh, yeah.
He was like, no. He was like, these were songs we left off because they thematically didn't quite fit. Mm-hmm. Or we had already said what we set out to say better.
Right.
And these are still songs that... he was like, I think these songs are great.
Mm-hmm.
They shouldn't see the light of day. He was like, you just were the one saying, like...
They don't fit.
No, I don't want that on there. And, you know, there's really not many spots on a record anymore.
Right.
You know, you just sort of have to... My goal is to make records more often and make them shorter.
Mm-hmm.
Because I write so many songs and so many just sit collecting dust.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing that you have that gift, that you write so many songs.
Well, I don't know if it's a gift. I mean, I don't know if they're good.
Clearly they are.
They're all good.
Yeah.
But, I think that it would be... behoove me to release more material more often. That's what I've been toying with anyway, and it seems like my whole team of people that I work with are more excited by that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're going to start to do that, maybe even starting with a CP.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to put a record out like a year to the day after Bury Me.
Oh, okay.
We just got busy.
Yeah.
And we end up, the touring thing becomes,
so intense.
Yeah, and it's, you know, we got, my friend Brian Fallon called us and said, hey, do you want to come open in Europe? And it was fun and easy, and then it was like, well, let's, at that point, Tim and I all have developed the set, like, let's get to all the places we didn't go on the Bury Me touring, and next thing you know, like, 6 months have gone by, and then you're like, we should put something out, and then another couple months it takes to get it out, so then a year has disappeared, and you, like, I think I want to, tour a little bit less and make more music, you know, and so that when we do tour, there's always some kind of new thing out. Because as you grow, the opportunities grow. So your friends ask you to open, or these things come up, and you're like, well, how can we not do that?
Yeah.
In the end, I would rather, well, at least for some of it, I'd rather be working in the studio, you know, especially the older I get. Like, the stage is fun and touring is fun, but I kind of don't, you know, when you get a little bit older, it's less about the shining lights, and more about, like, well, I have this, I have an audience, and I have this batch of songs, or whatever, I want to get this communication out.
Yeah, get it out, instead of just sitting on it.
Yeah, it's less about, oh, look at this cool jump we can all do on the stage, or something, you know, I don't know, it seems more like geared towards a younger
kind of. You've mentioned Tim a few times, and he's quite a bit younger than you.
Yeah.
How much younger?
He's 15 years younger.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Do you have other siblings in between?
We do. We have three sisters.
In between. Are you the oldest?
I am.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm 40, Tim's 20, he'll be 25, and our sisters, in fact, my sister Missy's birthday is today.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. She's 4 years younger than me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, our sisters are kind of the axis on which our whole family revolves around. You know, they all have had multiple children now, and, you know, their families are, they're the straw that stirs the whole drink, you know? And it's funny, because...
kind of hold everything together.
They hold it all together, and they sort of set the bar high on what's acceptable and what's, you know, just how to operate.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, when I got married last year, they were my my wedding party with my siblings. So, yeah, my sisters, for both of us, are, like, our kind of North Star.
Yeah. Were you guys really close growing up?
Yeah, we were. And then Tim is 7 or 8 years younger than my last sister.
Oh.
So,
like,
he's
oops,
the baby.
Or...
Yeah, he's... Yeah. Yeah, he was that thing. I was 14 or whatever, and definitely pushing against the parameters of like my evangelical Christian world mm-hmm. that I was raised in, and pretty much ready to maybe not look back, you know, just rip. And then I had this little brother.
Right.
So,
do you remember that? Like, did you help out with him a lot, or?
No, I wasn't helpful, but, but he was such like a little lightning bolt.
To the family.
To the family that it brought, it gave us a common thing where at that age, you know, as a teenager, I was pretty anti-everything, you know, anti-everything that I was being raised with. So we had this commonality, and he was really cute.
Mm-hmm. It kind of pulls you back in a little
it
bit.
It really did, yeah. And so, and then as you move forward, when Tim was 11, our mom got lymphoma, or came down with, I don't know what you say,
got it?
Or contracted it or something. and it got her, you know.
Yeah.
And so losing our mom was another thing that
And was that quick?
Yeah, we had 6 months.
Oh, wow.
And so that first Love Ones record is all written in the aftermath of that.
Mm-hmm.
Another reason why the family, the siblings were so, you know, mm-hmm. crucial and intertwined.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're the best.
And were you close with your parents when you were growing up? I know, obviously, like, teenage years, you kind of rebel and do your own thing. But
yeah, I think, like, the thing that I couldn't square was the evangelical world we were living in, you know, evangelical Christianity, and that, you know, in the '80s it was like the bait and switch of Michael W. Smith and Amy Grant and all mm-hmm. that stuff. And I just was like, this is bullshit. Mm-hmm. You can't give me
Amy
Striper.
Grant album.
Yeah, you can't give me Striper in lieu of Slayer.
Yeah.
I want Slayer.
Right.
And you know, for me, like sex, drugs, and rock and roll had their pull, and I didn't think there was anything wrong with that.
Right.
But
how'd your parents feel about it?
Not great.
Yeah.
But in the end, my mom was very street smart. You know, she was raised in the projects in Philly, and she just had a heart of gold. I think in the end, like, whatever my parents believed in terms of their religion or whatever, mm-hmm. it never superseded their love for their kids or
mm-hmm.
That family was paramount and stuff. So yeah, our family was close.
Yeah.
And then as we got older, as people always do, they relax. Mm-hmm. Or you hope so, at least.
Right.
And Tim, I think, had a big impact on that. So by the time we lost my mom, they were cruising towards kind of where my dad is now, which is pretty mellow.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, I think he's hipper than me now. He's into, you know, his craft beer and he knows all the up-and-coming singer-songwriters from WXPN down in Philadelphia and
mm-hmm.
stuff. He's, you know, what do you know about Hopalong? It's like, you know, it's just crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, so in the end, family became, you know, totally crucial.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Did your mom stay home with you guys?
She
work?
Did until the 90s, somewhere in mm-hmm. the 90s.
After Tim was born, maybe?
Yeah, and she started to work again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with 5 kids and going to Christian school and all that jazz, like it, you know.
You gotta work. Two working parents.
Yeah. I think that I was sort of one of the last generations of people that experienced that, where, you know, that sort of 1950s.
Yeah.
Thing where dad works, mom raises the kids, whatever. Yeah. And it sort of all shifted for everybody I knew in our little working class neighborhood. It all shifted around the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Like I remember our cousins, kind of all their moms started to go to work.
Mm-hmm.
You could feel it pulling.
Mm-hmm.
And then we sort of can trace that all the way through now. You know,
so your very first band, I think, was a heavy metal band. Best Bertillion.
Oh man, you're going way back.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were, that was in middle school.
Middle school?
Yeah, we put that together for a talent show.
Yeah.
And, I think we maybe wrote 3 songs. That's as far as we took.
So you were influenced by Metallica, Slayer, like that kind of stuff?
Iron Maiden. More Iron Maiden, Metallica. Yeah, Slayer would have been on the way heavy side. Testament, these kinds of things.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that didn't last long.
Yeah, well, middle school, I would imagine it didn't last very long. But then Step Ahead was high school, maybe?
That, for me, was high school. The other guys in the band had already graduated, so I was a senior in high school, and they were just a little bit older, and that lasted, I guess, for about 2 or 3 years, and started to gain a little bit of steam. We started to figure out what we were doing towards the end. Like, we got to start opening for big hardcore bands.
Oh, okay.
But at the very end, you know, I think we opened. I know we opened for Sick of It All. I think we opened for Hatebreed and Madball and stuff like that. And then that was that. You know, put out one record that we didn't even know what that even meant to put out a record. But it's funny that that's one of the last times I can remember, like, the unfettered, untainted joy of being in a band.
Mm-hmm.
Because after that, there was ambition.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, it has some magic, I would guess.
Yes. Yeah.
When you're that young and you're just doing it to do it.
The two of the guys in Step Ahead are still my best friends in the whole world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, the guys that I call when I have news or anything. Like, these are my dudes, you know, they're so it was magic.
Mm-hmm.
And the singer, who I'm not just as in touch with just because of our two lifestyles being so different, he was my childhood best friend, so that that band was special in that regard. And we were probably the most unique band I've ever been in.
Mm-hmm.
There was no, like, there's no constraints on, like, genre. We just were like, we want to play a song like the Deftones. We want to play a song like 7 Seconds. We want to play a song like, I don't know, fill in the blank of whatever aggressive music we were in. But it was from all these genres that, in theory, didn't really jive.
Yeah.
So it was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is that when you kind of discovered punk rock, would you say?
Before that, I discovered punk rock pretty young. I was into, you know, like, I was raised on the Beatles and Bob Dylan and all that stuff from my folks, and then I discovered this band, the Hooters, that were like a sensation in Philadelphia. That was my first band that I loved. It was just that I just loved, you know. And then Bryan Adams and stuff like that. And so right around the sixth grade, I started to get into Aerosmith and Iron Maiden and things like that. And when I found Metallica, that's how I found the Misfits.
Oh, okay.
And I realized that my uncle had loved The Clash, and I liked The Clash as a kid, but I realized that there was a commonality between The Clash and The Misfits. I was like, okay, that's punk, I guess.
Right.
And then from there, it was kind of a deep dive into the world of Danzig and all that stuff, and then, like, studying liner notes, determining what was what, you know.
Who thanked who, and...
Right, right.
Which album to buy next.
Yeah, and as it got... you know, in essence, like, I knew 4 or 5 punk bands, and then was into metal, and that crossroads sort of was like Sick of It All.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was like, okay, this is hardcore. This is a harder version of punk.
Right.
It's somehow related. And then, you know, there's so much back then. There was so much time and effort that went into developing that. How that all works. Now you can just read it on the Wikipedia page.
Right.
Caught up in, you know, 40 seconds or something. But then it was like scouring record stores and having a friend that at a record store, you know, the guy that's still my friend to this day was an older guy who would steer me away from what he determined wasn't cool. Like, I would go in and ask for Testament records, and he'd be like, why don't you check out Husker Du? Or why don't you check out The Replacements?
Oh, cool.
And yeah, and he was significantly older than me. I was a kid, like, mowing lawns and stuff, and so he was steering me towards not only that, but, like, Steve Earle, and this is a little bit later, but and Patty Griffin and Emmylou Harris and stuff like that. So I had all that stuff coming in, and, like, Tori Amos and Jane's Addiction and all that jazz, but got into punk and realized, like, well, I can play punk. I can play hardcore. I can't probably keep up with metal in terms of playing guitar and stuff.
Right.
And so it was a way to get onto a stage and play songs, you know, when you're 17.
Do you remember that desire? It was a desire to get on stage and play songs?
Yeah, that was the desire.
When did that start?
That was it. I mean, after playing the talent show.
Oh, okay.
You know, in eighth grade or whatever. You wanted to get back up there and get that rush. And you know, now after all these years of doing it, like, you realize that that rush is a lot about ego and not a lot about, it can be. You know, I think for me now it's much more about, like, trying to have a conversation with people, trying mm-hmm. to communicate with people in a way that is compelling. And back then I think it was just like, you know, I didn't get into it when I was a kid to be in Minor Threat. I got into it to be in Van Halen.
Right, yeah. Yeah, the show, like putting on the show.
Yeah.
The ego and all
sure,
that stuff.
Sure, sure. But I think, you know, now I'm less apt to play shows for any of those kinds of reasons. Like, I don't care about that stuff as much. In fact, it's like, the bigger the venue, the harder it is for me to do what I like to do about
it. Well,
the
to
show.
Communicate or connect
right,
with the
right,
audience.
Right, 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 right.
Yeah.
Like, and whereas, like, I have a band that some of the members are pretty young, mm-hmm. so they're like, let's play those festivals.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, I guess. Sure.
So then when did you become a roadie for Sick of It All? Was it when you were kind of starting to open for them?
So Step Ahead sort of fell apart. And Kid Dynamite was really lighting Philadelphia on fire. Mm-hmm. And I met those guys through a guy that tattooed me that was friends with Dan Heman. Said, oh, you guys would get along. And I was their roadie. Mm-hmm. And we had opened, Step Ahead had opened for Sick of It All, and then Kid Dynamite was opened for Sick of It All. Mm-hmm. And to me, Sick of It All was this giant.
Yeah.
They were a pretty popular band then, but like to me, they were the top of the food chain for that genre. And to, mm-hmm. I think even to this day, they still are.
Yeah,
there's no better
I think so.
Hardcore band, but... and their drum tech knew that I wanted to work for them or knew that I liked them or whatever. Yet he went to go play for Snapcase and said, hey, do you want a drum tech? And I don't know. I still don't know anything about drums.
Okay.
And said, sure. And I was with them for over a year. I went to the last tour I did with them was in Japan. It was Sick of It All on AFI during 9/11.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Yeah, when the towers came down. We were stuck in Tokyo. We were the first flight back into JFK.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, from Tokyo. So mm-hmm. it's crazy. And then I started working for the Bouncing Souls right after that.
Yeah.
We shared a bus in Europe in 2001 before, you know, and the Souls noticed that Sick of It All, the band guys had pizza and the crew didn't. And
so,
yeah, and Bouncing Souls guys were, you know, they're younger than the Sick of It All guys and weren't. You know, they're a lot more communist.
Yeah.
And Pete's pitch was, look, man, I'll pay you 300 more bucks a week. And
really?
And you'll get pizza.
I mean, that's all it takes, right?
I said, yeah, let's do it, man.
Yeah.
And I love the Souls. I thought that they were great. And
were you fans of theirs?
I was, yeah. And still am. And they've sort of become like family, you know?
Well, they have the reputation of just being the nicest guys. And I've had the pleasure of interviewing them. And
yeah.
They're just... super kind and
Pete's like a big brother to me.
Okay.
Yeah, he's still that for me.
Mm-hmm.
And all those guys, they're terrific. But yeah, I went and then I started working for them and that was years of roadie work and fun and they were really influential in like during that I had this band The Curse.
Mm-hmm.
We did about 100 shows. Made 2 EPs and then burned out. We toured with The Veil, and that was 2003. So that was in the midst of that. I was also touring with The Souls,
mm-hmm.
and putting this Curse band together that people liked. It
mm-hmm.
was sort of a, it was in the same realm as Kid Dynamite. It was really fast,
yeah,
but melodic. And I think during that, I kind of as that caved in, I realized that. I wanted to be like in more of a rock and roll band. And
mm-hmm.
at that point I had been playing punk for so long that my idea of a rock and roll band still to this day when I go back and listen to The Loved Ones I'm like that sounds like punk to me.
Right.
But that was sort of before that was right around when the Souls were really doing a lot of stuff in more of a Springsteen realm
mm-hmm.
and Against Me and then you know after us came bands like Gaslight or whatever.
Right.
Where you know, we were like links in a chain
mm-hmm.
to where punk is now, which is essentially, it sounds like Bruce Springsteen or the
right.
or the Goo Goo Dolls or something.
Right.
You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like it's rock and roll.
Yeah,
yeah. yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But that was kind of in The Curse. I realized that like, I just had no real long term interest in like the aggression of hardcore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's fun, but I just can't imagine.
It's not a lot of progression, right? A lot of growth or...
Well, there's not a lot of progression and there's not a lot... It's one of the most rule-based genres, you know, that you can find. As is punk, honestly.
Yeah, yeah.
The other thing I felt like was bizarre about it was there weren't that many women.
Right.
You know, there were, and I don't mean that in a way that's anything but just... I looked out and it was a bunch of dudes.
Yeah.
And they were ramming into each other and getting into fights.
Right.
And my interests were in songwriting.
Yeah.
And I just liked the vehicle of it being fast and exciting.
Right.
But,
Well, that was one of the favorite things that I talked to the Souls about was that they said a long time ago something about, like, people love to come to our shows because there were girls there.
Yeah.
And there were girls enjoying that music. And I was like, and I think maybe Greg said something about, like, if we're just writing songs that only cater... Oh, no, it was Joey Cape, actually. This was totally different. But he said, if I'm writing songs that only cater to men, what does that say about me as a songwriter?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that, again, it kind of does get back to my sisters. I'd say, hey, I'm playing a show. And they would come... My sister Jen is one of the smartest people I know. She's really kind of the oldest in the family. She's right behind me.
Okay.
She's like running the show.
She's like the matriarch.
Yeah, I'm just an idiot that plays guitar. But she said to me, she sort of was teasing an early Loved Ones show. She was like, man, you guys have a real strange subsect, you know. And she's like, you make fun of the Christianese or the things that Christian people say and do that you find to be bizarre. And she was like, it's the same thing. Like, you just have your own way of talking. And she was like, especially that hardcore thing.
Right.
And it really was I said, you're right. You're absolutely right. It's all, you know, I'm grouped in with this thing. I've always been that way though. Like,
yeah.
I've always been the Groucho Marx thing where it's like, I don't want to ever be in a club that would have me as a member.
Right, right, right.
And so,
once you accept me, I'm gonna figure out a way out.
But I do think, like, in the end, it was about writing songs. Like, Patty Griffin is one of my or Brandi Carlile. You know, these are my songwriting heroes, and that vulnerability that they imbue. I mean, I listen to so little aggressive music, especially now. But even then, for the kinds of shows we were playing,
right.
I was like, what the hell is going on here? And so the Loved Ones was sort of like, hey, we're going to make songs, and that's that, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think, like, figuring out how to develop those songs started to click more for me by the time I made Resolutions. I was like, oh, even slower and even more sung and enunciated and things like that. So it wasn't necessarily that I was playing towards women, like the Souls were saying, or Joey Cape, but more just like, I just want to play to human beings that don't have a pre-existing notion of what the show's gotta be based on some genre nonsense. You
right,
know?
Like, right.
I thought this was a punk show or whatever that thing is. Me too.
Right. Yeah. And you've credited the Souls, maybe Pete or Brian, or about, you know, encouraging you to pursue solo.
Yeah, so that was a long way around essentially what I was trying to get at earlier, was that they were really instrumental in, like, go make a band.
Yeah.
Like, can you do this one more tour for us?
Yeah. We need you this one time.
But then go do a band. And then eventually, like, I think I did one tour where the Loved Ones opened for the Souls, and I was guitar teching.
Okay.
And then Pete had this, like, big brother sit down with me, where he was like, you can't tech for us anymore because you're a rock and roller or
that's
whatever,
awesome.
You know? And I was like, all right, but the money's really good with the
teching.
You know,
yeah. Well, it's scary. It's really scary.
Yeah, it was scary. But their vote of confidence and the amount of tours they gave us and all that was pivotal.
Amazing.
You know, like, this is one of the great, great bands, I think, that, you know, to ever come out of New Jersey.
Yeah.
And then once the Loved Ones got running, I've been kind of, making records in some capacity ever since.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And your current band, The Mermaid, Jay Bentley's son is in it.
He is.
And I heard you talk about, you know, Jay talking, asking you if his son could try out or something. And you were kind of like, I don't know. Like, this is...
Well, I didn't want him to suck.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, Jay and I are friends, and as our, you know, we're friends with the Bad Religion guys, but it's not lost on me that they're Bad Religion.
Yeah.
And that ultimately, we want to tour with them more, you know, like, we did America with them, and we want to go other places. And so a great way to throw a wrench into the works right. is to have his son try out and me say, oh, your son kind of sucked.
Right. Yeah.
But thankfully it was the opposite, and Miles is great. He's a treasured member of the band. He's really talented and is great for the vibe. You know, he's really fun. He yeah. got, he was like sort of malingering around on the dock last night while we were loading, which, okay. you know, was not that cool of him, but he came back, having eaten some edible weed and drunk as hell.
Yeah.
Super fun. So it was like, all right, your sins are forgiven. So yeah, Miles yeah. has been a great ad.
Yeah.
It's terrific.
So you said your band is kind of some younger guys. And is there anyone?
There's no one quite as old as me. Kaylee is in her 30s, somewhere in her 30s, I'm not sure. And Kevin's right around 30, our drummer. Mm-hmm. And then Tim's the baby.
Okay.
But he, let's face it, he kind of runs the band.
Tim does?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's all. I mean, it's really cool that you guys have, I would assume, so if he's, how many years younger did you say?
15.
15, yeah. So then I would assume when he was really little is when you're out of the house and you're
yeah.
doing your own thing. So yep. for you guys to reconnect
well,
now.
Well, and a lot of those years were like pretty soaked in booze mm-hmm. for me. So I don't know that I was the best older brother. I think for some portions of it I was mm-hmm. when I was around. And then once I got touring and really, really partying, I just wasn't around. There was a huge disparity in years and then in lifestyle.
Yeah.
So when he was, I had made a solo record, toured on it, and Devour had, actually I had made two, Devour had come out, and I had gone to Europe with my friend Mitchell as a duo. On the release of Devour. And Mitchell was kind of not sure if he could continue touring and stuff. And I was like, man, I need someone who can do the things that I can do. Mm-hmm. Like singing and stuff, you know, mm-hmm. harmonies and whatever. I was like, but they need to be young. Mm-hmm. These old guys want a lot of money.
Right.
You know, or need a lot of money. I shouldn't say want. You need a living wage to live. Mm-hmm. And Tim was in college and I was like, well, look, I can give you the education that I got. I can show you how all this whole thing works. Mm-hmm. I can show you how I write songs. I can show you how to load the stage. I can show you.
Is that what he wanted at the time, I think?
Yeah, he was a bit uncertain, you know, mm-hmm. as to whether or not the enormous amount of money that college costs was going to be worth it.
Yeah.
Because he didn't have a specific spot he wanted to land, you know, so it's mm-hmm. he was kind of looking at it vocationally, and I right. think, like, in you know, that's a hard thing to do when you're spending that kind of money.
Yeah.
So he came out and on a 10-week tour. That was his first wow. tour, the Devour America tour. And we saw everything North America can pretty much offer in terms of touring. And I figured at the end he'd go back to college. Mm-hmm. Maybe he did a little, you mm-hmm. know, at different points he took some classes. But for the most part, he's jumped into the deep end, into songwriting and into guitar yeah. playing. And he's like a huge, that's the only trouble I think we have now is I don't like branding it as my name. Mm. I mean, I went solo now 7 years ago for reasons that are unrelated now
yeah.
to this, you know, now we're a team. Mm-hmm. So ultimately, I don't know how that's going to shake. I think Dave Haas and the Mermaid works mm-hmm. as a, you know, that's like a classic way that bands are understood, you
sure.
know, whether it's Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers or whatever, but when it's the two of us, like, I'm a huge fan of the Avett Brothers, too, so I see that, and I'm like, that's what we are, that's what
yeah.
we're doing. So I don't know if it's always going to just be my name. It,
right.
It doesn't seem right, especially when we're touring as
the Haas Brothers.
Yeah, it could work. it could work. But again, like, at some point, like, rebranding it would be, I don't know.
If it would make sense.
I mean, I'm up for it, and I hate to even use these terms of branding and stuff, mm-hmm. but, like, this is what...
You gotta think about that stuff.
You do. It's a
unfortunately.
It is a business.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, we'll see. But it does feel much more like a collab. Like, we're writing, the, you know, I would say 70% of the songs on the next record will be us co-written. Mm. Like 50-50 co-writes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Are you a good big brother now?
I am, yeah. I don't drink at all. I
yeah.
quit drinking 3 years ago. And,
yeah.
I think in general, like, he really has taught me so much about how to act with grace and dignity and stuff. Like, I think he's had so many rough things happen to him in his life that he walks a straight line, and he's mm-hmm. a good man. And I've learned at least as much from him as hopefully I've taught him. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I think I'm a good big brother now. I don't know. It's weird. It's, you know, there's an employer part of it too. You know, like
yeah,
it's like, all right, here's when we're working kind of thing. But no, it's great. It's a wonderful relationship, and that's what I mean by he's a musical soulmate. It's like, you know, guys like the Souls or the way that the Beatles talked about it is like you have this person where it just clicks creatively, mm-hmm. and I didn't really ever have that mm-hmm. until now. I didn't have that through my other bands.
Right, that's awesome. You know, so he just kind of. You just understand each other, right? Like, maybe yeah. without even talking, just like, yeah, you think this should go there?
And exactly, that's how yeah. we are with our sisters. There's an emotional mm-hmm. understanding in a sort of shorthand that is there that, mm-hmm. that is really special. And even on stage, like, we were, you know, I can kind of look at them. We were in Scranton the other night mm-hmm. playing a show, or Wilkes-Barre,
okay.
Pennsylvania, and the Menzingers are from Scranton. Mm-hmm. And I was playing an old Loveland song, and he was playing along, and I just looked at him. And it occurred to me in the song that we're near where the Menzingers are from.
Yeah.
And I just kind of looked at him and started to sing a Menzinger song I didn't really even know.
Yeah.
And mapped, it just landed on the chords as best I could. Wow. He followed.
Wow.
It's stuff like that that's kind of like...
caught it.
He's
yeah.
like, oh, I know what he's going to do.
Or, that's amazing.
Yeah. It's stuff like that that's kind of, you know, spiritual in that mm-hmm. weird way. It's like your minds are closer... than they would be if you just were two random people
yeah.
playing music, you know, or it takes longer for that develop, mm-hmm. to develop, you know, like you can develop that with a band
yeah.
over time, but Tim and I have that almost right away.
Right. Yeah. It's a million times easier.
Yeah. It's pretty special.
Do you think being so much older, he learns from your mistakes or?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that. There's definitely, you know, a Bible's worth of mistakes that he's seen me make, but I'll offer him little advice. For instance, like if he gets into a little bit of a dust up and with his wonderful, amazing fiance,
yeah,
and he'll be like, "I'm not gonna go that deep into it, but I'll go like, hey, here's what I would suggest.
Right.
You know, being right is totally not the point of how you can navigate this. By the time she gets home from work, if you've gone to UPS and gotten that package that you overslept for."
Mm-hmm.
That's going to go a lot farther than you crone to me about how it's an unrealistic expectation.
Yeah,
or some,
yeah, yeah.
Whatever, bullshit
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
And he'll go like, you're right.
Right.
And things like that where your little squabbles he might have with one of my sisters, mm-hmm. I'll be like, you might want to not enter that bee's nest right now.
Right.
You know?
Well, and you also said he's an old soul, so he probably offers that to you sometimes.
He does often, yeah, yeah. Because I'm more prone to being reactive you know, things, because, even just running the band, you mm-hmm. know, it's like, it's a small business,
mm-hmm.
so there's a financial component to it where, you know, if things are not lining up, it's like, it can get frustrating, and his calm is really welcomed, because he's like, yeah, it's all going to be fine,
mm-hmm.
the show's at 7 or 8 or 9 or whatever,
yeah.
whatever that is, we'll play it, and then we'll go to the next thing.
Right. Know?
And that's very zen.
Yeah.
You know? And so, yeah, he's given me a lot of advice. I guess we've given each other advice. He's become much more of a best friend than he is a little brother, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That little brother thing's almost gone now. You know,
yeah.
He's pretty grown.
Right. Yeah, that's amazing. And you got married recently.
I did,
congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
And I heard you say somewhere that you moved out to California maybe when you were still dating? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
I moved there 5 years ago.
And you took a chance on love, I think, is what you said.
That's probably like my best try at some Bryan Adams poetry or something. yeah, I did. I mean, I did take a chance. I didn't know that it would work. I'd been, you know, through a relationship that didn't work out. That was, you know, a married relationship, and
mm-hmm.
you know, I was 34 or something. And 35, and you can go a couple different ways when that happens, mm-hmm. you know. And I was like, ah, this seems like a good bet.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is like I was in love.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And it was like, it's okay if this doesn't work out. At least you're still like you're still betting on love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's kind of the thing that we have is in this very strange species that's developed. Yeah. Is like,
well, it's nice that you did that. And so I guess the alternate would be to just kind of go in your hole.
Yeah.
And shut off from people.
There was a lot of that, for sure. There was a lot of that leading up to that. There was a couple years of that kind of lifestyle that goes along with being like a person that was untethered to anyone and drinking a lot of booze and playing a lot of shows, doing a lot of drugs. Yeah, and I'm happy to not be in that head. I mean, I think like I'm better on a team than I am by myself, and I think that's evidenced with the band and with touring with Tim, and then also in my personal life, you know.
Yeah.
My wife and I are a good team, and
is the song The Ride about her?
Yeah.
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 Do you write a lot of songs about her?
I wrote a whole record about her, yeah.
Yeah,
the last record was a lot, you know. I'm trying to think of what song. There's probably six or eight of those songs are at least related to...
Have some sort of...
Yeah, yeah, there's lots of stuff.
Yeah.
And I actually think one of... Yeah, there was a couple references to her on Devour because I was recording it as we met.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's some Easter eggs on Devour that are related to her.
Oh, cool.
But yeah, she's terrific, and
and you're enjoying California?
I am enjoying California. It's terrific. It's hard for me to think of going anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
It's also hard for me to keep up with the rent in Santa Barbara, but
right. Yeah.
But we have a great time. We have a great group of friends out there, and you know, I have this extended family on the East Coast, and I'm always here, you know, whether or not, because we tour in Europe quite a bit. It's kind of the main...
When you go to Philly, do you stay with Tim, or...?
I stay with my friend Dave, who was in Step Ahead,
Okay.
And sometimes Tim. If it makes more sense to just stay with Tim, I will.
Yeah.
But I usually stay with my friend Dave, who's out in the Burbs, and he and Brandy are, like, friends of mine I've had for 25 years.
Right.
I think it's... Yeah. I think I met him. Maybe it's... 23 years. It's something crazy
wow.
like that.
Yeah.
When you say it, you can't
think it's that hard
that's
to
even
imagine.
Possible.
Yeah.
But,
well, so you and I are almost the same age.
Ah, okay.
I'm just like a month older than you.
You are?
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
So we both turned 40 recently.
Congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations to you. So
yeah,
I was going to... I know. And, you know, they say, like, obviously it's midlife, which if we make it to 80, great. But what would be your goals? Like, if you look back at the last 40 years and how crazy and how much change, and I don't know, for me anyways, right? There's like all these different parts of your life leading up to where you are now. What would be your goals for the next, or your goal for the next 40 years?
I think I kind of have, like, I'm okay with my current trajectory, I suppose, which is, in terms of, I mean, I want to have a family, so I'd like to have kids. My wife, thankfully, is younger than I am, so that's still a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be just another one of those white guys in Santa Barbara who's got a younger wife that has kids, which just makes me feel a little uncomfortable. But
you'll
hey,
be 50 taking them to school.
Probably.
Yeah.
With any luck. So,
yeah.
That's an aspect of it I would like to that would be the biggest change, I think, to the program. Other than that, I want to put out records, like I was saying, just more often, and tours, you know, a little more succinctly.
Uh-huh.
I want to work with this band. I want to work with my friends. I think one of the biggest shifts that's happened over the last couple of years is, like, realizing, like, just in this year, I've been able to play some shows with my friend Dan Andriano. And we toured with Fallon, and we're doing this thing with Frank, and we're opening for Gaslight. And as I've taken inventory, whereas last year we played with a lot of new people, a lot of new different, you know, experiences, and headlined some, and brought new bands out, and all this stuff. And I realized, like, these are my people. These are my people, just like my sisters are my people.
Right.
Like, when you're 40, yeah, I'm open to making new relationships.
Right.
I am. You know, if I make new friendships, or we bring out an opening band, or we open for some other band, and you develop these connections, great, but I'm not seeking them as much.
Right.
I just
you have your people, that make you feel good and that you want to be around.
Yeah. And I don't, I'm not that interested. Like, I want to just keep going down this track. You know, I have the amazing opportunity and the amazing life that affords me. You know, it's a small but devoted audience that's growing. Mm-hmm. It keeps growing with everything we do. So if that can keep happening and I can sustain not getting a job where I swing a hammer or sell a hot tub,
yeah,
or have to drive truck or something, I can still make songs and play shows all over the world. Mm-hmm. And have a family. That to me is such a win, because I feel like, just putting out that last record after such a long break, mm-hmm. and taking the risk of bringing a band, mm-hmm. and having it work was like, I can't ask for that much more out of the world, you mm-hmm. know, other than maybe a family. That would
right.
be...
Well, that was my last question, actually, because I did read somewhere that you maybe didn't want to have kids, and maybe this was a long time ago.
It was probably that period I was just talking about.
Yeah. I'm going to live in my hole by myself for a while.
Yeah,
forever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With my broken heart and my
right.
bottle of booze.
Yeah. But that's great that you do want to have kids. When I interviewed the Souls, it was funny because it was right before Greg had his baby, and I think Pete had, one on the way.
Yeah.
And we were all joking about how you get what you get in terms of kids, Greg was probably going to have like a Republican, jock kid or something.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that was my last question, is do you think you'll have a family? And
yeah, I do. I do. That's a goal. And mm-hmm. I think, again, it sort of gets back to the other facets of our conversation earlier where, I don't know. I mean, I've been in multiple different musical acts and toured with acts that do well and seen what giant stages are like, mm-hmm. and really famous rock stars and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's less intriguing to me to live in that lane, where there's like a lot of self-absorption and mm-hmm. a lot of ego and a lot of look at me, mm-hmm. especially as you age.
Right.
There's friends of ours that I won't name that I'm sure we can do the math on that are still living like that.
Yeah.
And it's getting them into a lot of trouble, mm-hmm. that are older than I am, mm-hmm. know? And so they're cautionary tales. It's like, you don't want to be in your 50s and, asking the loaders where you can get the good drugs.
Yeah.
It's just that's not what I want.
It doesn't age well.
No, it doesn't age well. Neither does ego. I mean, ego's right. so gross when you're in your 20s. But
yeah.
At least it's excusable.
Right.
But
yeah, makes sense.
To me, like, I just want to be more, you want to be the change that you want to see in the world, mm-hmm. And so I kind of just want to, live some integrity years, mm-hmm. where it's not all about what I want. It's not all about what feels good. And mm-hmm. it's not all about what serves me.
Well, we start to think about a legacy, right?
Yeah, exactly. I probably think too much about that,
yeah.
in terms of my records. I want these Bruce Springsteen kind of really sturdy records that I can play for 20 years or whatever. I should mm-hmm. probably just put out more songs. but it is interesting to start thinking about that as just a person, mm-hmm. All right, well, there are some years I'm not proud of, but let's make some years that I am.
Right.
So it's exciting to think about it that way, and to have teammates that I feel like are helping me towards that end.
Yeah, that's awesome. That might be our sign.
That's our sign.
They're playing us off, I think. Like the Academy Awards. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Hey, Bill, you want to cue me? Tell it.
flap at your wings. We got wild for the night, tried everything. Just a princess and a barber in a bed for a king. We might have been going too fast. All your girlfriends whispering, saying, can't leave you alone. They threw a whole lot of shade on our little flame. Gonna chase the shade away with a shiny little ring. Wait till they all get a look at your ring. We might be going too fast. Everybody got something to say, talking about it'll never last. But it's a hell of a ride. Cause it's all-